Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Only at True North stores. New True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
And sorry if I'm jumping the gun here a bit, but there's a report that you're looking into a contract extension with Maryland.
What I can tell you is Damon Evans and I, he hired me. We're on the same page of what we want to do for this program, what we want to do for this university. His focus and my focus are exactly the same. So our focus right now is strictly the NCAA tournament and this team. But all I can say to that is that me and Damon are on the same page, and we always have been.
That was Kevin Willard before Maryland's first tournament game against Grand Canyon back in March of NCAA tournament time. Why am I playing that? Because there was a story yesterday in the Baltimore Sun written by Taylor Lyons. It was an in-depth, titled Inside Kevin Willard and Damon Evans, The Chaotic Exits. With a headline, Maryland Got Screwed. A subheading, There Was Always a Rift Between the Former Men's Basketball Coach and Athletic Director, a Close Partner of Willard Says. So there you go. I didn't talk about this yesterday because I didn't have a chance to read it. It came out during the show. Read it afterwards. So I want to weigh in on this story. First of all, let me just say this. For those of us that, and there are many of us, that we're familiar with the Maryland situation and the Maryland athletic department situation over the last many years. None of this came as like shockers, you know, at any point, whether it was Kevin Willard, you know, announcing on behalf of Damon Evans that he was leaving in that lengthy press conference before the NCAA tournament started. And that, you know, that there were problems between the athletic director and the athletic director's, associates and the basketball program. It was two coaches. You know, at the time I said, look, we've now had two pretty damn good basketball coaches. I know many of you disagree with me, but it's my opinion. In Mark Turgeon and Kevin Willard, both decide that this wasn't where they wanted to be. So, you know, it was a look in the mirror moment, and we talked a lot about that. And in reading this story, there is a lot here that's very familiar to many of us, and there are a couple of things in the story that are very interesting. Let me just say this, big picture. Anybody that goes all in on one side or the other doesn't really know much about this situation. This is the typical, you know, his side, her side, the truth lies somewhere in between whenever you get a breakup, you know, and you hear his side and you hear her side and they're the opposites. And then you're just like, you know what? Experience tells me that the truth lies somewhere in between. And I think that's what this situation is. Although there was a couple of, I think, you know, a few reveals in this story. This is something that I don't think everybody knew, but there was certainly an understanding that there was some early frustration. But at the very beginning of the story, Kevin Willard, Taylor Lyons writes, Kevin Willard's frustrations with Maryland dated to his first week on the job in 2022. Quote, this from Harry Geller, who worked closely with Willard and founded two name, image, and likeness collectives that funded Maryland men's basketball. He wrote, he said for this story, quote, you can quote me directly on this. This is what he always said to me. One of his quotes was, I've never seen a place that cares less about winning in basketball than this. From the first week I met him, he was unhappy. Closed quote. I knew that Mark was very unhappy with Damon Evans for the last several years of his tenure. I know that Kevin wasn't thrilled with Damon Evans or the athletic department, and I don't think he was the only one. But I didn't realize that essentially the first week on the job, he's like, what did I do? You know, the story continues. Willard's instantly fractured relationship with his own athletic department splintered from there over the next 3 years, developing into a cold resentment for former athletic director Damon Evans that led to a messy breakup and a dark cloud that hovered over the men's basketball team's drama-filled run to the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament. The Baltimore Sun contacted more than a dozen key decision makers in and around Maryland athletics. Those who granted interviews with the Sun described a men's basketball coach and an athletic director tandem that never coalesced. Willard, always asking for more, loathed Evans over a belief that he could have done more to make his program competitive, despite being given almost everything he requested. Evans, who rarely said no, thought Willard's complaints were unfair. And the story continues. So that's one, is that from week one, at least according to Harry Geller, Kevin was unhappy. Kevin Willard was unhappy. Number two, in terms of a reveal, is this. Because this is, you know, this falls under the his side, her side, the truth lies somewhere in between. Kevin has been absolutely vilified for the way he exited the job. And I said during that time, and I will continue to say today, yeah, there are two sides to this story. And yes, it could have been handled better. I don't think he should have said what he said in those press conferences. I don't think he should have said what he said to me when I had him on after, you know, that first round where they, you know, had the big second round win on the Derrick Queen buzzer beater. When he said, if I get everything I want, I'm staying. Because from my sources at the time, they ultimately did give him almost everything he wanted. But there was one thing that he could not be sure of. But there's a part of this story that I think is very important for Maryland basketball fans to understand. Because this is the part where everybody that believes he was always gone, I think, are wrong. So, what's Jack Litch's first name? He's a real estate agent, big Maryland guy. Got him blanking. I'm so sorry about that. Rick, right? Rick Jack Litch, who's part of the collective with Harry Geller and others. He was quoted as saying the following in this story. I wouldn't be surprised if Willard had a handshake deal with Villanova in February, said Jack Litch, the former president of the Terrapin Club. But then he says this. Now, I think if Damon had been there, then Kevin would have gotten his contract finished and he'd still be at Maryland. He told me then he was hoping to have it done in the next couple of days. A week later, the rumors started coming out about Damon leaving, and then Kevin had no one to negotiate with. There wasn't a commitment he thought he could count on. Again, two sides to every story, and even this. Who knows how truthful it is, how exaggerated it is, how spot on it is. But I thought and said at the time, while he didn't handle it well, it was a look in the mirror moment for the university. And oh, by the way, yes, there are a lot of people working to make Kevin comfortable with the offer for a contract extension and some of the commitments that they are making. But there's no athletic director, and no matter how much he loathed Damon Evans, the devil he knew in the moment was better than the one that he did not know. So in Jack Litch's comment, now, I think if Damon had been there, then Kevin would have gotten his contract finished and he'd still be at Maryland, is what I believe to be true. That if Damon Evans didn't leave, they would have gotten a contract extension done and Kevin would have still been the head coach at Maryland. And that sort of bucks up against two things. One, he loathed Damon, but again, the devil you know. And two, when Jack Litch says, well, I wouldn't be surprised if he had a handshake deal with Villanova in February. Well, both things can't be true. You know, he can't have a handshake deal with February with Villanova, and then you think he would have stayed had Damon Evans remained the athletic director, because they were close to getting a contract extension done. So they were close to getting a contract extension done to lock him in, to stay. He was planning on signing that had the athletic director turmoil not taken place. I believe that to be true. Again, do I think he handled it well in the moment? Do I think he could have handled it better? I do. And I'll never come off that. I don't think that, you know, throwing Damon under the bus before that first game against Grand Canyon made a lot of sense. It brought a lot of attention to what a lot of people knew, which was the, you know, the overall dysfunction of Maryland's athletic department. But at the same time, they were working on a contract extension, and then the athletic director up and left. And he did not have an AD. So one thing they couldn't promise him as they all got together and came to him to give him what he wanted to hopefully stay, they couldn't tell him who he'd be working for. I think there's a lot more to this story. Again, probably didn't handle it well. Probably should have just said not answering any questions about anything other than Grand Canyon, other than Florida, their opponents through the tournament. That's all I'm talking about. And by the way, that wouldn't have been received well either. There's no way you can leave in most instances and have people supportive of you. But what he did was, you know, went a bit rogue, went way too public in some of the things he said, and he would have been better off staying silent, at least among, you know, the people in the business that know. I'm not talking about the fan base. But I thought that was a very interesting reveal and really sort of syncs up with some of the things that I've heard in the moment and have heard since, that they were close to getting a deal done, which really is in conflict with he knew all along he was going to Villanova. Maybe that was always the fallback. Maybe there was a, hey, I'm there if I don't get a deal worked out in terms of an extension. But I think to say that he was never willing to sign an extension to stay at Maryland, I think that's inaccurate. Lastly, I thought it was interesting. And by the way, overall, and this was something we talked about in the moment, overall, what happened ultimately, I hope and I believe, has made Maryland a better job than it was before all of this happened. And I think Buzz Williams could be a significant beneficiary of all of this. But lastly, I thought there was an interesting reveal about Jacoby Gillespie. Jacoby Gillespie, according to this story, has not been paid the full amount of the NIL contract he signed before last season with one of Maryland's collective partners. His father, Byron told the Baltimore Sun that he hadn't been paid, and added that Jacoby was promised he'd still receive his monthly checks regardless of whether he transferred. The collective now says it will not pay out the remainder of the agreement after he transferred to Tennessee in April. And Gillespie said, quote, when Willard left, they pretty much quit paying all the players. We're fighting that right now. Harry Geller told Jacoby's mom that he would get the money. Then all of a sudden he's gone. And this Simon guy, that's G. Roy Simon, who played wide receiver at Maryland, and G. Roy now is a big part. He's kind of the GM. And that's another thing that was made clear in this story, is that Maryland was one of the few major D1 schools that had not hired a GM to sort of manage all of this. But Jacoby's mom told Geller, Geller told Jacoby's mom that he would get the money, then all of a sudden he's gone. And this Simon guy, G. Roy Simon, since he took over, we've been into it with him. There were players that did get their money and players that didn't and are still fighting for it. It kind of makes it look like Willard was right. Maybe they don't have the money, closed quote. So, again, I know that this is not for everybody. This is very much a Maryland, you know, sports, Maryland basketball kind of a thing. But it was a chaotic, you know, couple of weeks. That is for sure. And it's a chaotic couple of weeks that, you know, will be remembered. And there's a lot that wasn't really known, certainly by the fan base and many people in the media as well, that maybe they got a little bit more clarification on. I think and thought at the time, and still to this day, that two things are true simultaneously. Kevin could have handled it better, and yet the situation was one in which it was a look in the mirror moment for Maryland. And what we have found out through this story, which, you know, I have learned, you know, since all of this went down, is that they were very close to signing Kevin to a contract extension, and he was very close to signing it. And if the athletic director that he loathed, even though he was the devil he knew, had stayed, he'd probably still be the basketball coach if he had stayed at least through the contract extension signing. But he didn't. All right, news on Terry McLaurin when we come back.
All right, minicamps are underway across the NFL. Some notable minicamp absences include Washington's Terry McLaurin and Pittsburgh's T.J. Watt. Both are attempting to secure extensions. Laremy Tunsil and Marshawn Lattimore are both present in Ashburn for Commanders minicamp. And the Florida Panthers last night boat raced the Edmonton Oilers in a physical and chippy game that ended by a score of 6-1. Murray State, they beat Duke in the Durham Super Regional to advance to their first Men's College World Series. And tonight, the Nats will take on the Mets at 7:10. Mackenzie Gore expected to take the bump. Nats on deck with Charlie and Dave at 6:40. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.
Joining me right now is Jesse Dougherty from the Washington Post. It's been a while since we've had Jesse on the show. He used to cover the Nats, and now he is writing about things like the state of college sports as it relates to getting outright paid to play with an associated salary cap and, you know, what's happening with NIL, et cetera. Jesse wrote over the weekend. He just wrote again today, and he joins me right now. So, look, I know that this is an ever-changing, very dynamic situation, but I just want you to start, Jesse, with the basics. You know, we've had this wild, wild west era of NIL for the last few years. It's led to, you know, something akin to annual unrestricted free agency for college athletes. What happened over the weekend with that district judge approving, you know, a major change to college athletics? Where are we right now as we head into, you know, a fall of college football and then another, you know, big college basketball season?
Yeah, I appreciate the way you introduced my coverage area, too, because when people ask me what I cover, I usually just say, if it confuses you in college sports, I'm probably writing about it. So that's kind of my unofficial coverage area. So last Friday, a judge in Northern California approved what's sort of colloquially known as the house settlement of for college sports. And what that's going to do is it's a consolidation of three major cases that basically challenged NCAA restrictions on athletes getting paid or athlete compensation. So in the backward side, it's going to pay athletes out and their lawyers $2.8 billion. I mean, that's a big class of athletes. So some will make big checks. A lot of people will make like $2, right?
This is for past athletes.
That's for past athletes and some current ones that are in a certain window.
Okay.
But more importantly, for the current landscape, this settlement is basically going to set the new economic model for college sports, which means that for the first time ever, schools will be able to pay athletes directly, not just through boosters and booster groups that we call collectives. And then on top of that, the NCAA and the power conferences are attempting to use the settlement and the rules it established to actually curb a lot of that booster spending, to make it so NIL deals are more about marketing and are in line with something closer to what they're deeming fair market value. Now, there's a lot of thorny legal questions with that, free market principle versus enforcement, but that's basically the gist. We're on the sort of tip of the spear now of this new era that will start officially July 1st when schools can start paying athletes directly for the first time.
Okay, so let's try to explain the new economic model and paying, you know, athletes directly rather than the way they've been paid for the last few years and probably were paid even before the era of NIL. Sure. So how will it work? I mean, maybe we just use the Big Ten as an example in a school like Maryland, which I'm an alum of and many people are who are listening are familiar with.
Yeah, so the payment model is being referred to as revenue sharing. Basically, the idea is that athletes will finally share in the revenue they generate instead of, as you mentioned, the schools relying on outside third parties, boosters, et cetera, to pay them, which has been legal, quote unquote, for the past 3 years. And then, as you pointed out, was been going on for decades before that. It just happened to McDonald's bags and what have you. So the revenue share payments to athletes, each school will start out with a salary cap of around $20.5 million. Now, that cap's going to rise each year for the next 10 years, is what this legal settlement covers. But basically, they have that money now to pay athletes. And what a lot of schools are going to do, what I imagine actually most Power 4 schools will do, is give a lot of that money to football players and men's basketball players, and then give a little bit of that money to women's basketball players, and then give an even smaller portion of that money to everybody else. And the reason why they believe they have legal cover to do that, and I believe it's going to actually just invite a lot more lawsuits and whatnot, but the reason why they believe they do is because that's the formula that was also used to divvy up that $2.8 billion I just mentioned on the back damages. Now, I know we're getting a little in the weeds here, but basically, the back damages decided that because football and basketball players had generated a lot of that revenue they weren't able to get in the past, that most of it should go to those former athletes in those sports. And now schools are going to use that justification to say, well, now that we're sharing revenue with athletes in 2025 and 2026, we believe that because those sports make the most money, those athletes should also make the most money. So you're going to start to see schools publicize their plans. University of Georgia is one. If you're interested in this, Google it, because they've put out their exact formula of which sports will get which shares of that $20.5 million. And I think their system is very indicative of how schools like Maryland, Michigan, Big Ten peers, Big 12 peers, ACC peers will also handle this.
So just tell me real quickly, what's Georgia's plan?
Georgia's plan is basically to give a really, really big share to football. I don't know the exact number, but I think it's in the 12 to 13 range. A really big share to men's basketball, and then I believe around $1,900,000 to women's basketball, and then around $1,900,000 to every other sport.
Right.
But if you think about it as a pie chart, football's going to take up about three quarters. No, I'm terrible at math, but around three quarters, or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then basketball will fill up some of that, and obviously a much smaller roster. Although men's basketball players in this era have made a lot of money because, as we see in the NBA, one guy can actually affect the score a lot differently, unless it's a quarterback, than football players, right?
Yeah.
Point guards and centers and power forwards are really valuable in this era, too, in college sports. And then the other sports kind of get put in this bucket where they're getting a really small share.
So let's just say, like, let's call it $20 million, $15 million goes to football. What happens then? How do they pay that $15 million out to roughly 100 players that are on the team?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be really interesting. I don't think
it's going to be, you know, everyone gets the same amount because that's just not how the world works. I think we see that in the NIL era too. Like, boosters don't pay every athlete the same. There are some schools who did programs like every offensive lineman or every softball player. But in football, I mean, quarterbacks, running backs, like, these are all going to be part of negotiated contracts. I mean, personnel directors and NIL directors at schools deal a lot with agents, some of whom are from the big companies we know, CAA, WME, through Rosenhaus Group, and some of whom are players' barbers or uncles or friends from chemistry class. I mean, it's been, you know, when you say Wild West, I think a lot of people might use that to say it's crazy that athletes are getting paid, and I don't think that's your point either. I think when people say that, it's lack of regulation has just created a crazy world that so many people are sort of clawing for bites of the apple.
Right.
So when we think about how that money's going to get divvied up, it's going to be all negotiated, and you're going to have a salary cap and a budget and a payroll, just like pro sports. We've seen a lot of college teams hire former GMs, personnel directors in the NFL, in the NBA, scouts, people who know this, because it's the professionalization of college sports. But really, I think while a lot of that's transferable, it's also so many different dynamics too. It's just been a really crazy world.
On, let's just call it, you know, the $20.5 million salary cap for the Power Four schools, it's up to $20.5 million, right? It doesn't mean that they're not going to be required to spend $20.5 million, in part because some schools won't have it to spend, right?
No, for sure. Yes. And you would ask about sort of Big Ten peers like Maryland. I expect a lot of those schools to get either at that number or really close. But, like, for example, Morgan State, the Maryland school, came out and said they want to participate in this settlement. It's optional for any non-P4 school whether they want to pay their athletes and then be subject to other rules like new roster limits and things of that sort. But Morgan State's going to pay, like, you know, less than $500,000 a year to its athletes. Now, right. They're going to only really do it in basketball, maybe some football. And their angle is, we want to really be competitive in our conference. We want to win recruiting battles against the school next door. We're not trying to be Duke, obviously. But they see an advantage where if they can cobble together the money from donors or from the couch cushions in their department budget to do that, they think it's an advantage. And I think there's a perception, too. Look at us. We're a small school, but we can participate in this new world. We can join the professionalization of college sports in a way that, you know, State U down the road, who you might be considering, too, as a Morgan State recruit, they're not doing it. So I think it's a great point, and something I should make sure to mention is that not every school is going to participate, and not every school is going to spend to the limit. But there's going to be a lot of interesting ones, like even some schools maybe launch into trying to monetize it for specific sports, soccer programs, volleyball. Can we stand out in softball, even if we don't have a football program? There's going to be a lot of that going on, and the sort of, I think a lot of schools also might wait a little bit, see it for a year, and then opt in later to see how does this play out, and then how can we fit into the landscape.
All right, sticking with the salary cap and the Power Four schools, will players be forced to sign a contract?
A lot of them will, yeah. And I think players want them, too, in some cases, too. They want the school to have liability that they'll honor the commitments. And obviously, that's a negotiation, and the more experienced lawyers will leverage that, or agents, rather, will leverage that. I think a lot of athletes may be going to be fairly blind, and schools will say things like, well, every athlete signed the same contract. All right, cool, let me sign my signature. And you might be binding on something you didn't really want to do, and later you say, man, now I'm trying to transfer, and I need to pay back half that money, or they're saying I need to be here for 3 years, or else I face financial penalty. Like, there's a lot of intricacies in this world, and I think without players' unions, without like an NFLPA-type group or NBAPA, like, there's big questions on how this stuff all gets worked out. There's a lot less oversight on both sides, for the players, for the schools. So it's there's going to be a year, 2 year, 3 year period here where I think there's more questions and answers on things like that. But we're going to see it sort of attacked and handled in probably 1,000 different ways, because there's just so many more programs and schools and coaches and agents than there are in pro sports. So there's creativity, but it's also subverting the system. It's also taking advantage of people and bad actors. So there's a lot going on.
I guess I'm wondering if this creates an environment where the transfer portal slows down, where it becomes much less than what it's been. Because in my opinion, Jesse, in many ways, it's been the, you know, the player that comes in for 1 year and then, you know, bids it out for the next year, unrestricted free agency, something professional athletes haven't even had. That's been more off-putting than the money itself. And I'm wondering if this salary cap associated contracts with players will limit or at least slow down the transfer portal.
Yeah, I think it could to a degree. And I think that's definitely a big focus for the NCAA. I think they want to limit booster spending because booster spending has largely fueled that mass transfer. I mean, it's like you said, it's annual free agency, but it's also annual free agency without budgets. It's also annual free agency where tampering rules are really, really hard to enforce. And I think on one hand, you say, well, athletes are really tied into situations for a long time. They've sort of been waiting for this freedom. But then there's the question of how much freedom is too much, and does it hurt the product? And does it hurt these athletes in some cases, too? So, I mean, I think on one hand, it's probably good that players can at least get closer to making the decisions coaches do. The public doesn't generally fault someone from going from Murray State to Kentucky after a great season.
Right.
For obvious reasons. But I think your point is spot on. Like, it's really hard to get behind these teams when you can't see the same group grow together or you can't see the three-year arc of a player. And that used to be the allure of college sports versus sort of player movement in professional sports. And it's actually reverted back to being what we see guys in baseball sign 12-year contracts. And that's think about that time versus, you know,
sure.
Sometimes a college career could be 12 weeks, you know, so it's I think there's a lot of introspection going on there because I think there's a recognition that the player movement as such is probably not sustainable, and there's going to be real effort to curb that for sure.
By the way, as it relates to, you know, this $20.5 million, the new economic model, we'll get to NIL in a moment. Would a contract that gets signed be a contract that would be a 1099 independent contractor, or would it be a W-2 employee kind of structure?
Yeah, that's really a good question. So the employee, they're not going to be employees. So there will be no employment contract, at least not right now. A lot of some efforts to unionize or to have athletes recognized as employees have died on the vine. There's still a federal lawsuit that's going on that could make that happen. But the NCAA is staunchly opposed athlete employment for a really long time. And the reasons for that are, you know, pretty dynamic. But I mean, one of them is being afraid of paying minimum wage to all athletes. Another one is being afraid of paying out workers' comp. It's a financial thing. But I think one thing that others would argue, and to some of your questions earlier, is that the reason why there's so much perceived structure in professional sports is because there's collective bargaining agreements. And collective bargaining agreements can only happen if there's an employee-employee relationship
right.
to bargain with.
Yep.
So there's a lot of people who've called repeatedly for collective bargaining in college sports, and they're well-meaning. The piece they don't always answer is, okay, great, but what about the employment status? So one sort of has to come with the other. There's been calls for a congressional carve-out to collectively bargain without employee status. I think that's a real long shot. But, so there isn't employment, and that's a whole other podcast episode, I think, or if you want to have me on, but it's a really complex question that continues to be deliberated.
Okay, so we have something that begins July 1st, which is the Power Four conferences, the big conferences with football and men's basketball and, you know, all of these other sports, there's going to be a salary cap where they're going to be able to pay the players directly and look for, you know, 75% to go to football, you know, 15% to go to men's basketball, maybe a couple of percentage points to women's basketball, and then the rest to the other 20 whatever sports. That's separate, though, correct, from NIL. So what's going on with NIL moving forward?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, because if you think about it, what has been the motivation for boosters forever? And that's get ahead. And if everyone's sort of spending with a similar formula, there are always going to be people who want to help their team, their favorite college, their coach that invites them to the Rotary Club, all those things. There's always going to be that person or many of those people who want to still help the team get ahead. And in the last 4 years, since NIL was approved in July of 2021, what that's meant is just giving an unchecked amount of money to these NIL collectives. A lot of times it was deductible to your taxes, and they're and off you go. We saw reports, I wrote a story last year about Ohio State's $20 million football roster. That's where that comes from. Oregon, you know, a lot more money. Nike money from Phil Knight and other donors. You know, all these things. Now the NCAA, as I said earlier, is trying to limit that spending. They're trying to rein it in. They want NIL to mean a deal from State Farm if you're Caitlin Clark, or a deal from the local car dealership in College Park if you're a smaller-time Maryland athlete. They do not want NIL to mean a booster gave $500,000 to help pay the quarterback who now is going to make that money for sending out three social media posts promoting a T-shirt.
Right.
That's what these deals have done. They've sort of built in some sort of action or service, a charity event, an autograph session, three social media posts, an appearance at a dinner, and they've attached that to money that, you know, I think the free market would say that booster can decide that that social media post is worth that much money. But if you're a casual observer, you're like, dang it, how much money for what? And the NCAA is really trying to weed that out. So what happens now is, does it go back under the table? Are there workarounds where that regulation doesn't work? Are there lawsuits that challenge that regulation? Does Congress pass a bill that allows them to regulate in the way they want to? So the question of what happens with sort of the booster economy of NIL is a fascinating one. It's really hard to answer right now because we're so soon after the settlement, but it's the biggest question because there's no world in which every single SEC football program is spending the same amount of money on its roster. That's just not how this has ever worked. Ever. And there's a reason for that, because there's egos and there's donors and there's seats to get out and there's, you know, and there's golf outings to go to with the AD and the coach. And I just don't see a world in which we're all actually spending to the same salary cap. I don't think that's just possible in this economy. And maybe I'm totally wrong, but that's where I want to see it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Hope all is well.
Yep. Awesome.
Jesse Dougherty, everybody from the Washington Post. Really interesting times. We've got a true salary cap now in college sports moving forward. All right, that is it for the day. Chris Russell is up next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Wherever summer takes you, save on your journey with True North convenience stores and Red Bull. Enjoy the new Red Bull Summer Edition, White Peach, a perfect balance of bold, sweet, and refreshing. Right now, grab any 3 8-ounce Red Bull for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon, just in time for your next road trip. Save big all summer long with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. True North convenience stores, fast, friendly, clean.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I felt like an insane person yesterday on social media reading comments about the weight of a wide receiver. Speaking of weight, if you wanted to hear Kevin today, you're going to have to wait until Monday. He's sick. Got a call this morning at like 5:45. He said, Denton, I don't have a voice. I need you to sit in. And I always said, you know what, boss? I will sit in for you. So Sheehan is out today. He will be back hopefully on Monday, assuming things are okay and everything ends up well. We got Ben Standing at 12. We got Adam Epstein, AWOD Radio at 11. I got a major life event that I'm going to fill Max in on at 10:45. Be excited about that. But I felt like an insane person yesterday because it felt like yesterday was the brunt of this, Max.
Not the day before?
A little bit of the day before, but I saw it all yesterday. Then. It started when a slow-mo video was posted of Deebo Samuel running a route, and people said he looks slow, as if he was going full speed in practice. And then people said, well, actually, he doesn't look slow, when they realized, oh my God, it's practice, he's jogging through a route. This is not real speed. They changed from he looks slow to he looks fat. How did we get here already? It feels so lazy. I have not ever looked at Deebo Samuel and thought that guy looks fat. Like, wow, that guy's way out of shape. What a loser he is. What has he been living on? Five Guys? Five Guys is like a half mile from the facility. He must be living there all the time. Has nobody ever watched Deebo Samuel play football before? Has nobody ever seen what this guy looks like?
It feels like this narrative kind of started when, or kind of, it started towards the end of the season when he kind of fell off.
It started because these idiots in San Francisco, someone leaked it to the media. That, yeah. They think he's fat. And then they ran with it to justify them letting him go as if he wasn't a massive game changer in their offense. I mean, I'm happy for Brandon Ayuk that he got $30 million, but I don't believe that for a second Brandon Ayuk is a better game wrecker than Deebo Samuel is. They didn't want to pay Deebo Samuel. More power to him. I'll gladly take him here to go alongside Terry McLaurin. We'll have an update from Adam Schefter on Terry's contract coming up here in the program as well. I'll gladly take Deebo over Brandon Ayuk, but somehow this narrative leaked from San Francisco and spread faster than COVID in 2020 all the way here to the East Coast. Like just an absolute wildfire, and now everybody is knocking on Deebo. And I debated, Max, whether or not I wanted to actually do this on the show, let alone start the show. We had great hockey last night. We got to talk about the overtime again.
Third time in the series.
I mean, this has been an insane series, so I want to talk about the hockey. But I read this morning after I got the call that, hey, you know, Sheehan's going to be out. We need you to sit in. I was like, sick, I'll sit in. So I just start naturally paying a little bit more attention to social media and Twitter. And then I see this tweet from Hogs Haven. And I used to work for Hogs Haven. I used to, you know, do a podcast there back in the day. Shout out to everybody that remembers the Pigpen podcast. It's a very small few, but shout out to y'all nonetheless. And I see them tweet that Deebo, they didn't even tweet that Deebo is Eddie Lacy. They tweeted Deebo Lacy Sr.
They sure did.
And that got my blood boiling, man. I don't know who runs that account. I know the podcast on the account, Trapper Dive Guys. Those guys are great. They do a great job. To my knowledge, they are not the ones that are tweeting from that account. But whoever tweeted from that account needs to get their phone locked up in a cage for a week. I don't know if you can ground a full-blown adult. I'm assuming an adult tweeted this. But that adult needs to be grounded. No phone access for at least a week. Eddie Lacy had a clause in his contract that he had to be under 255 pounds. It like gave him hundreds of thousands of dollars to be under 255 pounds. Even if Deebo is a little bit above the 215 that he is listed at, you know what the difference is between 255 and 215? That's a whopping 40 pounds. If you see someone one day, Max, and then maybe wait a couple of weeks, and you see him again after they've lost 40 pounds, it looks like they lost a human.
Yeah.
They're a completely different looking person. To compare Deebo Samuel to Eddie Lacy is in ridiculously poor taste. And it's also, by the way, it's not accurate. I was standing next to the guy very briefly, because Deebo has no idea who I am. But I was standing next to him when I went to minicamp this week. Minicamp, great time. Got a lot of thoughts on that, by the way. Ja'Cory, Crooksy Merritt.
Ooh.
There might be something there.
Listen, Kevin keeps telling everybody to pump the brakes, but I keep seeing those videos, and I'm liking what I'm
seeing. I texted him about it 2 days ago. Yeah, I texted him about it on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
I had just finished my show. I just worked out. I was cooking breakfast, and I texted him. I was like, hey, I was at practice yesterday. This Crooksy Merritt guy looks the part. That doesn't mean much when he's not in pads, but we'll get to that in a second. But I see Debo walking up after they're done with practice. And I'm like, all right, let me be the judge here because the camera is kind of whatever. Let me be the judge. I got four eyes. Let's utilize all four of them. And he walks up, walks past, and I'm like, he's jacked. He's not cut. He's not built like your A.J. Brown. He's not built like your Calvin Johnson. You know, Calvin Johnson looks like a mega. They call him Megatron for a reason, right? Like,
damn right.
He's not built the same way as that. But you can have very different body types and not be fat. He's just I can't believe I'm about to break down this man's body on radio. But this is just kind of where we're at right now. I feel like I'm doing it in the defense of him. But he's just a stockier dude. Stocky and fat are not the same thing. If you see a stocky person and you see a fat person, there's a noticeable difference between the two of them. Fat people ain't fast. Stocky people are fast. And Debo got some speed as they ramped things up more and more throughout the course of the week. And they started to do drills actually running against one another and some 7-on-7s, a little bit of 11-on-11s, no pads, which is fine. You don't want to see anyone hitting. Not yet, at least. But you started to see the actual speed a little bit more. And that's actually what ticked me off the most about the Hogs Haven thing, is because they took an actual video of him moving at good speed and then decided to just join in the trolling with a Debo Lacy Sr. Again, it's a pathetic thing to say on social media. I was livid when I saw that. I was like, my blood was boiling this morning. I have made the decision, Max. You and I rode together last year. Mm-hmm. On Luke McCaffrey. And that always is not going to stop because Wes Welker is a part of this coaching staff.
And he changed his number.
And he changed his number to 11. 11's a good number.
He's got Edelman's number now.
Yeah, you got Edelman's number. I'm going to make those comparisons. I am riding with every single Debo Samuel prop week one.
Woo!
Over in catches, over in yards. Might do a little bit of combo between rushing and receiving yards because my guess is he gets at least a couple of carries week one. I'm going to bet a Debo anytime touchdown. At this point, I kind of want this to continue just so it fuels my nature to bet Debo. And maybe if this continues enough and idiots scream loud enough that the books will actually give us super favorable numbers. I'm telling you right now, Debo is going to be fine week one. He is going to be totally fine. The conversation about him being overweight and being fat is just complete nonsense. And it was taken because someone in San Francisco decided to leak that to save their ass, as if that organization is not starting to sink. If you haven't realized that by now, welcome to the party. You're a little late, but welcome to the party. That San Francisco organization is starting to sink. They are on the downtrot more than they are on the uptrot, while this organization is very much on the rise. So I'm rocking with Debo Samuel with every single prop. There is not a number that is too high that I will not bet on Debo Samuel come week one.
Debo, I like it.
Lacy Sr. Oh my God. I was throwing punches in my room like I was a teenager.
It was disrespectful. It was very funny that that was the talk of the town yesterday morning, was the Debo Samuel video. And then the second I get home, it was what? I want to say 2:50, 3:10. The Commanders post a video of Debo running much faster than he ran in that video before, just to a little subtle response to the big back allegations.
Hey, we're seeing what's going on here. Because it is also important to mention they are not the ones that posted that first video.
Yeah.
That was from what they have at minicamp is you are allowed to. They have a little hill that overlooks the practice squad or the practice field. If you have ever been to training camp, you know that they have four fields. And when you go to training camp, they use two that are more towards the right where you can fit a bunch of people. That's where they put the stands. And you kind of get that forest is not the right word because it's in Ashburn, Virginia. But you get that collection of trees by the side. You, if you are a child or if you have kids, your kids have probably stood over there and watched before. I know I did. I was standing over there when I was younger, watching Santana Moss and at the time, old Bobby Three Sticks. What a time that was. They were on the other field. So for minicamp, they do the other field. And what they do is they allow media members to stand up when they are running 7-on-7s or 11-on-11s on this little ledge. So you can watch. But what you can't do is get clear looks at communication. You can't hear play calls, things of that nature. It's just stuff that NFL teams want to keep in house. And I would imagine that every NFL team across the league does something similar to that. But you're allowed to tape. So what they were running when Debo ran that route, if someone has said this on the show, Max, stop me and we can move to hockey. But what they were doing was they were just running 7-on-7s, and Debo got the break, kind of jogging through. Jaden finds him, passes on the money. He gets into the end zone. Next rep, line it back up. You're moving, but you're not moving at 100% or game speed. You're probably moving at about 60% 70%, just to get the legs out, maybe hit a little bit of a stride, and then you move on to the next play. That's what that first video was. The second one was a little bit more closer to game speed, it looked like, probably in the direction of like 75 to 80%.
Yeah. I mean, we touched on a little bit yesterday about what George Kittle and Bobby Wagner said, and like, you just kind of run half speed on install. Like, that's what minicamp is for, is to get everybody up to speed on the playbook, have them see it and run their routes in real time, and understand what they're looking at on the field. You're going to be going half speed in training camp, or in minicamp, not even training camp. This is just kind of what
it's
how it
what
works.
It is. It was literally the first day.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the first day they'd done. Debo was here at OTAs. He'd done some other stuff in the offseason, but it was literally the first day. Like, there were certain guys that were held out of that. Like, Laremy Tunsil didn't do a whole lot that day. Did a little bit of the drills, didn't do a ton of the drills. Linnell has talked about that at length on social media. If you're not following us on social media, at the Team 980, you can follow me at the Denton Day. Laremy Tunsil didn't participate a lot day number one. I believe he ramped up a little bit. Jalen Lane wasn't out there. Michael Gallup wasn't out there for a majority of it. He's nursing a hamstring injury. Even on day number one, Bobby Wagner wasn't out there. So it literally is just the ramp up. It's the slowest day that you're going to go for the whole week, and that just happens to be the video that was produced on social media, and everybody lost their absolute mind about that. You want to join the conversation on the show, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. It is the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 with Denton Day sitting in for Kevin. But we got to talk the hockey. Let's do a little bit of that hockey last night. An overtime thriller. Edmonton gets the win to tie the series at 2-2. Here's the game-winning goal from Leon Draisaitl.
Evan Bouchard back in his own zone now with Ekholm. But Colson, nice pass across. Here's Jackson. He scores! Leon Draisaitl's won it. In game four for the Oilers, and the series is tied at 2.
Oh, man.
The best goal scorer in the NHL doing what the best goal scorer in the NHL does. He wins it for Edmonton. They tie that series up 2-2. I don't know about you, Max. I am not expecting to see Stuart Skinner in goal in game number 5. Get him out.
It's tough, man. Like, Skinner, he is so hot and cold. But there are a lot of... I don't think that first period was his fault. I understand the...
About being immediately... Not immediately, but being at that one spot... I guess it was 8 minutes in at a two-man disadvantage is tough.
Yeah.
I mean, you put your goalie in an awful spot, which, like, Edmonton was.
Yeah, it's like, what are you supposed to do? But Stuart Skinner is the type of guy, it's like, he's either letting in 4 goals or he's letting in 0. And it's a way to communicate to your team by putting in your backup goalie that, hey, you guys need to tighten the hell up. You guys need to start diving in front of pucks and making... You guys need to help your goaltender out. And Edmonton kind of received the message. They started playing a lot harder. They found that... They kind of found their game in the second period. But yeah.
They scored. So they were outscored by Florida in like an 8-minute span, 3-0.
Yeah.
I mean, and not quite a blink of an eye, but it was like three blinks of an eye. And you're like, oh, God, it's 3-0. And considering how the previous game had went... I did feel like pulling Skinner was the response that Edmonton had to do. Like, the coaching staff, you just can't leave him in there. The guy's basically getting crucified in net by this Florida Panthers team, and especially with the Chuck getting going, because you're like, oh, my God. Like,
it's like, oh,
you know, you were down 2-1, and Chuck wasn't even playing fantastic, and now he's playing great, and you're like, Christ. Like, this is – we're going to be in a really bad spot here. So I think the move to put Picard in there was a good one, but it did wake them up a little bit. And, I mean, when Edmonton is awoken, they are this beast. They have so much offense, and they are so fast with the puck. I did scratch my head a little bit and say, maybe you should have started with Picard. But it was a tough first period that they were able to rebound from.
Yeah, he did impress me quite a bit coming down the stretch. That last goal with 20 seconds left was just so tough. The scramble out in front, it was a frantic play, and credit to Florida, man. They're one of the most built for this teams I've ever seen in the Stanley Cup final. So
they're like the perfect team.
They
are built to perfection. They have a great goalie. Mm-hmm. They have a bunch of different dudes on offense that can score. Defensively, they're an absolute unit. It's literally like watching
well-oiled
machine.
They're so
fast
physical.
And they're physical, but it has never felt like in watching them, at least more frequently now, that they are, they let the physicality get the best of them.
Because, mm-hmm.
you know, how often do you see teams in the playoffs, they try and be physical to a point where now they're leaving things open on the back end, they leave passing lanes open, and they get shredded on those. It feels like Florida is the opposite. They have, like, this perfect marriage of physicality, speed, but also intelligence to not let them, to not have them play outside the foundations of their defense.
Yeah, it... The first time I kind of really realized like how important the finding the like the triple point, the perfect point where the triple point solid, liquid, and gas. But finding that just one point where you, like everything comes together. You have speed, you have physicality, you have the IQ, the passing IQ, like the game IQ to just bring everything together. And so the Caps had it in 2018 and Florida's had it for the past couple years. It's just been... It's been so impressive to watch, and every time I watch them, it really does kind of bring me back to 2018, which is kind of nice. but yeah, man, this is going to be a great Stanley Cup final. It's been a great one so far.
Because this is the second
game
where you've had a game-tying goal in like the final 30 seconds. Like, yeah. Didn't I guess it was probably game one, right, where Edmonton had one with like 19 seconds left.
Mm-hmm.
He was like right at the buzzer because I was ready to go to bed, you know, staying up watching.
Yeah, yeah,
I was
like, you're like, oh,
I'm ready
right.
to go to sleep. Get some shut eye.
That was me last night.
Gotta be awake early, and then all of a sudden, at the drop of a dime, it's boom. All right, we're going to overtime, and you're like, well, all right, I'll just take my seat back on the couch here. Maybe go get more of a little bit of a drink and keep this party rolling. I love the overtime thrillers. Are really what differentiate, and they have been so far, the Stanley Cup from the NBA. Now, with that said, the NBA Finals, I think, has been great.
I think we might get both these series going 7 games.
I would love that. I prefer 6 in the Pacers because I feel better about the Pacers winning in 6 than 7.
Mm.
Because I think that the Indiana home crowd is just crazy.
Ravenous.
We're gonna break that down in a little bit more depth as the show goes along. We do have game 4 tonight. I am expecting a bounce back from OKC, from at least one guy on the Oklahoma City Thunder, that being Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But these NHL playoffs, man, they're so electric. Just so electric. And when you have, like, you have a team in Edmonton that didn't play great in the first period and still hung 5 goals on one of the best teams in the NHL without Connor McDavid scoring. Because Connor McDavid is playing well. I don't think he's playing as well as he did last year when these two teams squared off for the first time, but he is playing well. It's so much fun to watch. We also got word that we had the goalie in Winnipeg won the MVP and the best goaltender.
Yeah, it was a good video too.
I didn't see the video. Was it a good video?
Yeah, I mean the whole bit this offseason for the NHL has been surprising people with awards. Like they did if you saw the Spencer Carberry video where he was doing an interview with Monumental, and then boom, they bring in the trophy, his family, and then his extended family surprises him. So that was a really cool one. But for Hellebuck, he went out fishing, and so his family like got all set up. They like brought the Vezina out because I mean it was kind of he already knew that he was
he already knew he was winning that one.
Right.
The MVP I felt was a little different.
Yeah, and then they were gonna do the picture, and they were like, "Wait, there's one more." He's like, "What? One more trophy?" And then they bring it out, and he's like, "What the hell?" So it was a very cool video, very cool surprise for him. I didn't think that I really didn't think he was going to win the Hart. I
didn't either. I thought it was going to be Draisaitl.
Yeah, because I mean, you got the Rocket Richard, and he's been playing so well. But yeah, good for Hellebuck, man. I'm very happy for him. He had an incredible regular season, so yeah, well deserved.
I've always wondered. I don't know this for a fact, but as we get more into this normality of surprises. And we are going to surprise you. And look, your family is here. And look, your extended family is here. Because we've seen this done for NFL Hall of Fame. It almost feels like they've kind of been the ones that have pioneered it. With yeah. that, you know, that giant human being that just shows up at your door.
Shannon Sharp is in Sterling Sharp's basement.
He's just like everyone's just there. I've always wondered, if you're bringing in extended family that is not from around here, is that like a text that goes out and says, hey, you guys should be here at this time? Or is like the league in this instance paying for them to be there? Are the Capitals paying for the extended family to get out there and celebrate there? That I mean, in today's economy, that might be a little bit of a difference on who can make it out there and who can't.
I'd like to think that the team in the league
feels like it would be the the correct answer there, right?
Say, if you have a good enough season to win one of these awards, the least the NHL could do is fly your family out to present you with the trophy.
Exactly. But I've just always been curious about that. Like, how does that go? And then are you telling them all of the information? Because are you trusting everybody within the family to keep it tight-lipped? To not spoil it. Maybe a rogue text goes by. Like, if you knew this information, let's just say 2 weeks in advance. If you like, all right, sure. You are a part of the family. We'll say carbs. He's winning. Mm-hmm. He is winning the award. You know, 2 weeks in advance. If you go out on Friday night, get a little overserved. Like, what happens if you send a rogue text message? Are they letting everybody in on that? Or is it just the need to know and everyone else thinks they're just going on a trip? I have so many questions. I don't know that you can answer all those questions.
I wish I could.
Or any of those questions. But I have a lot of questions, and I need them to be answered. I also have fears. And what my biggest fear is for the Commanders has nothing to do with the weight of Deebo Samuel. But it is justified. I will share that with you when we get back. It is the Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Only at True North stores. New True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980. Some minicamp observations coming up in 20 minutes, but we head out to the phones now. Welcome in our guy Ben Standig of The Athletic, insider here on the Kevin Sheehan Show. You can find him on Twitter at Ben Standig. Ben, it was great to see you on Tuesday. Hope you're doing well. Walk me through what happened with Noah Brown this week. I was only out there on Tuesday. I didn't see what happened when he went down. From your vantage point, what did you see?
Yeah, so he was running sort of this intermediate route. Marcus Mariota threw the ball his way. It was an accurate throw, but kind of a, you know, one where Noah Brown kind of went down to the ground to catch it. And, you know, this is all speculation as to what happened. So, you know, please understand that talking to the audience. But, like, he hits the ground. And, you know, we've all watched sports enough to know when something looks odd. Mm-hmm. And the landing, the conclusion of the play, it seems odd. Like something was, like he just didn't land right. And this is, of course, a player who has a lengthy injury history, unfortunately. So maybe your mind goes a little bit to that. automatically, but then he doesn't get up right away, and he's laying on the ground for a couple extra seconds. The training staff comes out, he gets to his feet, gingerly walks over to the sideline, but then after a couple of minutes, they put him in a cart and bring him up to the building. Now, I probably, this is a mistake that I made and others as well. It's like when you say somebody gets carted off the field, that has a certain connotation, and it may right. in this case as well. But the field, as you know, is below the building, so it's an uphill walk. Not like, I'm not saying it's a walking up Mount Kilimanjaro, but it's an uphill walk. So I think probably rather than having him do that, they brought him in the cart. But nonetheless, you know, something looked odd. And then when he got to the building, I don't know what it was about. I don't know if it was about frustration or, you know, in the ride, they hit a bump or I don't know what, but he let out kind of like a pretty, you know, loud scream or, you know, and again, I don't know if it's frustration or anger or pain. So put it all together and it was like, whoa, what's going on? You know, what's the deal here? So we don't have, unfortunately, any real update. Dan Quinn yesterday said that no Brown would get an MRI, but he hadn't had one yet. You know, now we don't have to, Dan Quinn doesn't have to talk to us for 40 days. So, you know, works out for them. I imagine if it's something serious, we'll hear about it, you know, in the coming days. And if it's not something serious, you know, we'll probably still get an update at some point. So yeah, unfortunately we may not have a great feel for this. Hopefully it's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. I think Noah Brown's a very key part of this offense. He gives them that sort of power forward, size ability to box out receiver or box out defensive backs on, like, you know, a third and short type of play. We know he can get down the field, make plays, draw pass interference penalties. So hopefully he's good to go. But, yeah, it's definitely one of the lingering question marks out of minicamp.
When you say that he fell awkwardly, was it more like his knee kind of almost banged up against the ground? Or, like, describe what awkward falling is, if you could.
Well, like I said, he went down to the ground in order to make the play. And I don't know. I mean, I guess it's just like, you know, a guy hits the ground mm-hmm. and – Maybe something about the way his body sort of contorted in the moment. And like I said, it was pretty, you know, it's pretty quick. You can tell a guy gets, you know, hits the ground and then immediately pops back up. We don't think about it twice, but it was obvious he was down. He was down there for an extra second. I don't know. It's almost like an instinctive thing, again, of just having watched these guys over and over and over over the years, just right. athletes in general. I mean, and so, yeah, it wasn't like, and again, you know, we're not watching this from a TV angle. There's no replays. You know, you don't necessarily know that it's going to be something significant, perhaps, as you're watching it. But it just looked like an awkward fall, and that he just wasn't getting, you know, going to get up gracefully. At something had happened, and then, you know, as I said, it you know, it just looks worse just because of, you know, the taking him in the cart and all that stuff. So, you know, again, this is a guy who's been successful in his career, but unfortunately injuries have just constantly popped up. Last year's was maybe a bit fluky here, where he gets his kidney injury in the Tennessee game and then knocks him out for the year. Glad that he's doing fine from that. But, you know, he's had the usual assortment of NFL injuries over the years, and that's kind of kept him from being, you know, a consistent presence for anybody in the league. And, you know, hopefully that's not the case here.
Ben Standing with us here on the Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980. Is Deebo Samuel fat, Ben?
Give me the outside perspective. I look at him and I don't, like, this is the first time we've seen, you know, I've seen him in person, and he's definitely not, like, you know, if Jaden Daniels is the definition of, like, a skinny frame, Deebo isn't that. But I guess I'm looking at my own gut and I don't look at Deebo and think, boy, the guy is fat.
Like I was insane on social media reading everyone call him fat. One of, like, Hogs Haven said that it was Deebo Lacy Sr., as if he had a clause in his contract to where he couldn't weigh 255 pounds like Eddie Lacy did in Green Bay. I don't think he's fat at all. I've been stunned by people thinking that they look at him and say, that guy's fat. I don't think he's that at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like when this first quote-unquote controversy started, and one of these, like, ridiculous aggregators who's just a complete moron tweets out, or he takes the video that somebody put of Deebo jogging on a play and acts like he's, like, being, you know, lollygagging out there, when it's not that at all. You're not going full tilt on every OTA or minicamp practice. It's much more about getting a feel for where everybody is on the field, the communication, what's supposed to happen. It's not some hardcore getting ready to play the Cowboys or something. So that part was stupid. But then when it got to the weight part, I was like, I don't know what I'm looking at here. I don't quite understand what is happening. Because to me, the type of player that Deebo Samuel is, I talked to somebody about Jalen Lane today on my podcast, and Jalen Lane's, 4'3", 4'4" guy. The body type kind of goes with that. He's not the biggest guy. You're getting him the ball in space and going from there. Deebo Samuel is a guy that you can line up in the backfield, right? And give him the ball from that perspective. Not like run between the tackles, but like he's got enough body to like he's going to deal out some punishment as well. His yards after the catch prowess is in part not just because he's running past guys, but he's running over guys and through tackles. So like I don't understand what do people think that type of guy is going to look like? So yeah, I've been confused. I've been wondering myself, am I just like so in the weeds here I don't even notice? Like what is going on? So yeah, I've been confused as well that this has been such a topic.
It's been if I had hair, I'd be pulling it out. I don't have hair, but if I did have hair, I would be pulling it out by reading some of the stuff that people are saying about him, literally based off of that one video. Outside of that, you've been around the team for the past couple of days. What has been the feel around Deebo Samuel and what he's been bringing so far to the offseason?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, since we've been out there, obviously Terry McLaurin has not been. And I think Deebo, even though he's the new guy, he's acting, I think he's in the role of, elder statesman, so to speak, a guy who's been around the league who can, help out, whether it's the Luke McCaffrey's or Jalen Lane's or on the other side, putting in some extra work with Mike Sanders still after practice. It seems to me he has done, all the right things as best as I can tell. You can see some of the ways he can be used. He had one catch at one point during this whole process in the end zone. I forget which quarterback it was, but it was kind of like looking for somebody who threw a high ball over the middle in the end zone, and Deebo is the one that went up and caught it. I think there was another play this week that I thought, I don't know if it was the day you were out there or not, but if you were going to sort of quote unquote like critique him, it was one where he caught like an underneath pass and Kane Medrano, the sixth round pick, was like the closest defender, and he just really, as soon as Deebo got it, knocked the ball away from Deebo, went into the hands of one of the undrafted free agent defensive backs, and was a turnover, and everybody was kind of happy about that. Like, that's the type of player, like, hey, you can't make that during the season. You got to secure the ball and whatever. I mean, again, it's a rapid practice, so for the most part, he's looked pretty good. I haven't had any issue with what I've seen, but when you get to training camp, everything's got to be tightened up a bit. That's fine. But right now, it's just not that critical to act like it's a big deal. And also with him, the type of player he is, I said this on my podcast, this is a weird analogy, so bear with me, but like when Taylor Heinicke was here, he was not a guy you would watch in practice and go, boy, this guy is amazing. Because so much of what he does is like this instinctive stuff with the ball or after the snap or drawing a play up in the dirt to just figure out, how do I manufacture something here? I kind of feel like Deebo to a degree is sort of similar like that. The yards after the catch stuff only really works when you're trying to tackle the guy, right? And there's no tackling happening right now. So I don't think we're really going to get a full sense of what he does, maybe until preseason games or the actual games, but maybe at least in camp when there's a little more formal pads are out, things like that. So, I've been fine with Deebo, and that's why, like I said, I was really kind of surprised at what this reaction was the other day.
Ben Standig with us here on the Kevin Sheehan Show with Dente sitting in for Kevin at Ben Standig on Twitter, where you can find him. What about with Laremy Tunsil? He wasn't at OTAs, showed up for minicamp. What did you think of him?
Yeah, I doubt he is in his week one peak condition at the moment. He's getting back out there, and again, offensive line or the defensive line, it's really hard to judge these guys at this time of year. No pads, you're really not doing much in terms of actual blocking and hitting and all that. So we'll see. But look, he just watching him a little bit, seeing him walk off the field with some of the younger linemen, and hearing him talk to them about just hearing a couple conversations about, his time in the league or how he works on a certain drill that they were doing. And, you know, so much of what is looked upon at this time of the year is that sort of that team bonding. And Dan Quinn talked yesterday about seeing the veterans talk to the young guys on their own about whatever, you know, so again, something specific on the field, how they're prepping off the field, or just even as, you know, one human to another, getting to know each other. And you know, it looks like Tunsil to me kind of filled into that role and started doing so nicely. We'll get a much better feel, of course, when we get out to training camp. But, you know, seeing Tunsil at left tackle with Brandon Coleman at left guard, if that's the way it plays out, you know, this is like to go from that, or to go from, you know, back a few years ago when you were like, you know, Charles Leno was fine, but then you had like the Andrew Norwells out there. To go from like that to this is just, you know, the potential here is just so much higher. It really goes to show where this thing can go. So, you know, look, you know, the offensive line will get a better feel come the come training camp, but Laramie Tunsil, you know, so far so good. And, you know, they're definitely counting on him for sure.
They seem to also love Connerly. And I watched him on Tuesday, and I was like, he was doing well in the drills. Now, drills are just drills, but everyone seems to really love the first-round pick.
Yeah, you know, when it comes to who these guys are as people, again, I never assume I know anybody for sure, but, you know, this is 2 years in a row where they have drafted guys that, you know, seem to be, you know, the kind of kid, you know, you want to bring home to your mom, so to speak, you know, good, does the hard work, has talent, you know, does things the right way, fits in, you know, and he seems to be another guy like that. You know, he's 21. Some guys are 21 and they seem a little more mature. He's 21. It feels like he's 21. You know, there's a lot of kid in him when we're talking to him, and that's fine. I mean, it's what it's supposed to be. And, you know, you can see the raw ability. You know, I still think there's, you know, potentially a world where Andrew Wiley, you know, starts early just because he's been more established. And again, Connerly is super young, but by the same token, you know, the upside there is notable, and he could be the guy out of right tackle when it all starts, and eventually he'll be out there. I don't see him playing guard or anything. So, I mean, you know, I don't want to say sky's the limit, but, you know, it certainly looks like for a franchise that's had a lot of excellent tackles over the years, you know, it's possible he is, you know, the next in line in terms of a guy that they groom here from the start, the way they did with, you know, Trent Williams and Chris Samuel and, you know, Joe Jacoby, et cetera. So, again, I don't want to put him in that category. He hasn't played, doesn't done anything yet, but you know, that's the hope here. If he's able these first few years really become a presence at the right tackle, and then maybe he eventually moves to left, that would be such a great deal for this franchise. And, you know, again, at this point he's checked off the boxes, but now he's got to get to the next level when we get to later in the summer.
Ben Standing, our guest here on the Kevin Sheehan Show. You can find his podcast at Last Man Standing, wherever it is that you get your podcast. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin. Anybody stand out to you when you watch the defense this week?
On the defense? I mean, I think Trey Amos is overall, you know, the question of his, hey, you know, what does he look the part? You know, again, for me, that's so much of what these sessions are about, and I definitely think he looks the part. We talked to Joe Witt Jr. earlier in the offseason, and he, you know, discussed, you know, they brought in guys up front like Javon Kinlaw and Dietrich Wise with the sole purpose of getting bigger and longer on defense. But he extended that to say this is also why we went for Trey Amos, to have a guy who's got some good size and length, not to mention speed and coverage ability, you know, because, you know, look, Mikey Sanders still obviously did a really nice job last year on the outside, but he's also, you know, on the smaller end. You could see that in some of those matchups late in the postseason against like A.J. Brown, and that's a tough one for a guy like that. Amos will not have size issues for the most part against receivers. And look, Marshon Lattimore showed up this week. He seemed to be healthy. He seemed to be in a better place than he was last year when he admitted he was just playing through injuries. It's way too much and pressing and so on. But Trey Amos gives you a little bit of cover if Lattimore does have some issues, if Amos can, you know, keep this going and show he's ready to go week one. But to have Lattimore and Amos on the outside with Sanders still in the slot, perhaps, again, to make the comparison of a previous roster, just a year ago, the group was Benjamin St. Juste, Manuel Forbes, and Mike Davis were your outside corners. Again, Emmanuel Forbes is looking fine early in camp in his rookie year, so you know it's a good cautionary tale. But you know, there's a lot to like about Amos, and you know, I thought he did a pretty good job. And if you tell me he's the week one starter, that's not going to surprise me at all, based on the little bit we've seen here so far.
Did they ramp up Kwon as the week went on? I know when I was there on Tuesday, he wasn't doing a ton of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was doing a little bit, but I don't know that he was necessarily flying around too much. You know, he did, as he, you know, he had a couple off-season shoulder surgeries, so I don't get the sense that he's like limited. But you know, again, there's no real need to force anything if any guys are, you know, dealing with a little bit. And also, you know, like with anything else, you want to see as many guys as you can. You know what Kwon Martin can be, and Joe Witt thinks he can be, you know, one of the better safeties in the league. So, you know, they already see where the upside is. They want to get a feel for some of their other guys. You know, Joe Witt's talked about getting Jeremy Reeves on the field more defensively. We'll see how that goes. But, yeah, I don't think they're forcing Kwon, but, you know, this is a very interesting year, I think, for him, because, you know, first of all, it feels like he's been here for way more than just 2 years. But secondly, you know, the first year, he's obviously stuck on a team that ends up being terrible. Last year, he was playing, as we find out later, playing injured for a chunk of the year. And now, you know, if he's healthy and ready to go, and he, you know, he could be one of the leaders of that secondary for sure, that defense overall. And, you know, where does this go for him? You know, what can he really be? So I think it's a pretty interesting year for Kwon Martin, and there's no reason to think he's not going to continue to have an upward trajectory.
Gut feel here, Ben, before we pivot to basketball. Are we celebrating a Terry McLaurin extension before July 4th?
Before July when?
Before July 4th.
I'll guess no. Could something happen, you know, while you and I are talking? Sure. But, I mean, if I had to guess, like, you know, actually, I don't know. July 4th, let's say the 13th, 14th. I guess maybe that's look, do I think he'll have a deal done before training camp? I mean, that would be my assumption. I get right now that there's some frustration on McLaurin's end. You know, hey, why do we even need to have too much of a discussion? Look what this guy has done. You know, over the entire time he's been with this team, now he finally gets a good quarterback, and he has, you know, 13 touchdown catches. You know, he had another few in the postseason. You know, he's always played. He's a leader in the locker room, a leader in the community. What is not to like about McLaurin? Why are we even having this debate? And, you know, it feels like, you know, from what I can gather, the age conversation, that he'll be 30 this year, and most of the top receivers in the league are under that. And, you know, do you want to give a guy a 3-year extension, you know, when he's going to be, you know, past 30, and it's, you know, there's no like definitive answer of when receivers drop off, but you know, over 30 starts to get a little bit worrisome, perhaps for some. But you know, I don't think McLaurin's side is going to agree to that, and they shouldn't necessarily. So, eventually, I think something gets worked out. But you know, the age matter to me is the one that's really interesting, because if Washington just says, "Hey, look, we love the guy, but like, we just can't pay the same as you know, a much younger Brandon Ayuk or a younger DK Metcalf are getting," and he's, you know, his side will be like, "Well, he's more valuable than those guys. So what are we talking about?" So unless that becomes a massive sticking point, I think they eventually get something done, whether that's July 4th or right before training camp, but something I would imagine gets done eventually.
NBA Finals tonight. Do the Pacers go up 3-1?
Well, I mean, you know, you and I were texting about this earlier. I mean, if the game could go either way, I just don't understand why people have been so stunned that the Pacers are playing well. People are acting like OKC was, you know, this is a foregone conclusion. I understand that they won 68 regular season games, and you know that's wildly impressive from an all-time perspective, but this was a weird regular season. You know, the Thunder and the Cavs were two teams that just dominated despite having like no real players who have, you know, they didn't have a guy who you're looking at as like one of the top, you know, 30, 40 players of all time. They don't have guys who have been there, done that necessarily in this league in terms of the finals. So like the idea that this, the youngest team in the league, was just going to come in and roll over a Pacers team that made the conference finals a year ago, that has like a guy in Pascal Siakam who was a key player for a Toronto team that won the title. who has a head coach in Rick Carlisle, who's not only one of the better coaches of all time, but he's won a title in this league, whereas OKC is essentially also going with a very young coach. I just did not understand why this was happening. So I'm not stunned at all that Indiana's winning. I picked Indiana to win in six. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But, you know, I've been really blown away that people have been so shocked at what is happening. So, yeah, I think Indiana can absolutely win tonight. They've got depth. They've got numerous guys that can score. I think for OKC, somebody else has to step up besides Shea, and not just in like a, you know, Chet Holmgren or Jalen Williams gets points in like secondary offense or fast break. Like somebody needs to really like take control so Shea is not getting constantly, you know, pounded by defenders. He probably will regardless, but like somebody else has to step up for them. Otherwise, I can absolutely see Indiana, especially in the fourth quarter. OKC has dominated the first three quarters.
Right.
Indiana is taking control in the end, and the end is, you know, especially in the NBA, that's what matters. So, you know, they need somebody in the fourth quarter who can really make plays on offense in particular and not just rely on SGA to have to kind of do everything.
And the Chet thing is so fascinating because if you just read box scores, you saw him have 20 in game three, but 15 of those came in the first quarter, and he was relatively absent the rest of the game. Like that just, you can't have that happening against a team like Indiana that is just about as deep as OKC is. I also picked him in six, Ben. For the record, I got a very good number at the books, so I'm hoping that Indiana wins in six. It's been fun, though. I think he maybe people aren't watching as much because there are no big markets, but at the very least, the games have been fun and entertaining.
Oh, yeah. I think this is a really interesting matchup. I mean, you know, the other part of this is like everybody's saying OKC, every single aspect you would like give the plus to OKC. And maybe that's true to a degree, but the thing that people are overlooking is it's not that it's like dominant. It's like, okay, maybe they're, you know, SGA is better than any player on Indiana. That's fine. The OKC's perimeter defense is ridiculously good. Sure. But Indiana definitely has dudes. Nembhard has caused Brunson problems. He's causing some problems over here for some of their guards. You know, they've got plenty of guys who can defend. You know, the depth, OKC's depth is insane. Indiana's depth is nuts in this modern NBA. Denver had like four guys playing, you know. The Timberwolves' depth was inconsistent. Indiana's running out nine dudes who are playing well, every game, and they got guys that can score. They're obviously, Haliburton is just an all-time clutch guy at this point. So, yeah, it's OKC may end up winning this series, and either way, they are set up to be a essentially really dominant team for several years.
Right.
But yeah, it's not. Indiana has a lot riding, has a lot going their way, and also like their home crowd. That's a real thing. I don't even know if home advantage means much anymore, but they have one there, I think, in Indianapolis.
I'll get you out of here with this. The next time you're at the facility is when? What's the next couple weeks look like for the Commanders?
We're not there. I don't know the exact date yet, but somewhere around like July 20th, give or take, is when they'll report. And then, then the fun begins and we start watching training camp. And so, yeah, we've got a ways to go. We won't see or talk to any of these guys for a while.
All right, Ben, enjoy your break and enjoy game four tonight.
I look forward to it, man. It was a pleasure, Denton. Thanks for the time.
That is Ben Standig joining us here on the Kevin Sheehan Show. Always a good time to catch up with Ben. And now we get about 5 weeks of a break for the Commanders before they are then in pads. The next time we will see them, we'll probably get like a day or two of just shells, and then we will see them in pads and hitting, and you'll get to see just how fast a guy like Debo is and how a guy like Ja'Cory Crooks-Merritt looks in pads and what Laremy Tunsil looks like in pads. I saw him in person this week, Max. He's a ginormous human being. He is just a massive, massive man. So I'm excited to see what he is going to look like. One real quick thing on the NBA. We will preview tonight's game to close the show, but one real quick thing on the NBA. My favorite thing to observe over the past couple of months has been the magnitude of people who have screamed both on television and social media about how much the regular season in the NBA sucks. And then use nothing but regular season statistics to prove why OKC is better than Indiana. It is the ultimate level of hypocrisy, and it's why I've been betting Indiana for the entirety of this series. Does that continue tonight? You'll find out in about 30 minutes. But coming up next, what Adam Schefter said about Terry McLaurin and his contract status. Don't go anywhere. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show with Dende.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.